Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, got a full house today.
We certainly do. We've got entourage, we've got paparazzi, we've got a studio full. This is going to be a lot of fun. First up on today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Chief Operating Officer with BIP Wealth, Mr. Nate Smith. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Before we get too far into things, Nate, tell us about BIP. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, BIP Wealth is one of the Southeast top private wealth management companies. Been around since 2007. And we make people's lives better by helping them achieve their financial goals.
And then how'd you get into this line of work? Have you always been involved in wealth management?
No, my background actually doesn't seem on its face to be applicable to private wealth management.
You were poor?
Yeah, for a time I sure was, like most of us were. Right. No, I was I was in the Marine Corps for 7 years as an infantry officer. And then I transitioned from that to do 9 years at a veteran service organization called Hire Heroes USA. We're the top veteran employment organization in the country. But when I made the decision to pivot from the veteran and military space, I was looking to take that 16 years of leadership experience, characterized by organizations that valued service and results, and continue that service. And I happened to find BIP Wealth exactly at the right time frame when I was looking to make that pivot. And BIP Wealth is a culture of excellence. It's in a growth posture, and it's client first. And so all these elements really checked the box for me and helped me to continue that service in a way that was really valuable to me.
So when you were leaving the military and the military organizations, you were saying, I'm going to go into wealth management, or you were looking at a variety of things, and then you kind of landed in wealth management?
You could have been a radio host, for example.
Exactly. There's a lot of opportunity out there. It's a big world.
Yeah, I wasn't really looking for wealth management. It really found me. And I think I would have been okay with doing almost anything that I felt was serving our country in another way, in another format. But I fell in love with the culture and the people at BIP Wealth. And when I found out that they're fiduciaries, in other words, the client interest is the preeminent interest for this company, it just hit home for me because I've had a lifetime of service. And so in my view, this was an opportunity to help propel the engine of democracy, which is really capitalism. And those who have contributed, I think, most to capitalism are entrepreneurs, people who have accrued wealth over a lifetime, and those are exactly the type of individuals that we help.
So now, are your clients here primarily in Atlanta, or are they anywhere in the country?
We've got clients in over 40 states, but the preponderance are in the metro Atlanta area.
And was this started as an Atlanta-based firm serving Atlanta, and then it's just grown over time?
Yeah, it was started by two, actually, Georgia Tech, former Georgia Tech baseball teammates, who played together in the 90s, went separate paths in financial services, and then kind of linked back up in 2007 and really back of the napkin to this company to say, what is the market missing right now? And it was access to private market opportunities for high net worth individuals under $10 million. And it was a client-centric focus. And so they said, well, if we could put an ideal company together, this would be it. And they started in Metro Atlanta, and it's just grown naturally for the past 10 years.
So now walk me through what's different about BIP Wealth. Like, I'm a new client. What's going to be different than going to another financial advisor?
Yeah, I would say our primary value proposition is our access to private market opportunities. Our sister company, BIP Capital, is one of the most active venture capital firms in the Southeast and the most active in Georgia, doing over 43 deals last year alone.
Wow.
So that's a tremendous opportunity with vetted companies that you wouldn't normally get, and particularly not below the $10 million net worth individual. We also provide concierge service, and as I mentioned, we're client focused. So you're really going to get a lot of expertise from our personal wealth advisors and our chief investment officer. And then you're going to get those access to private market opportunities.
And this word fiduciary means something very specific in your world, doesn't it? Can you talk about that a little bit?
It does. So fiduciary means that the client interest is always going to trump our own self-interest. That means, among other things, that that the way we've structured the company is that our personal wealth advisors are fee only. In other words, they only get compensated based on the assets under management. They're not incented to sell products. They're looking for what are the goals of the client that I'm working with? How can we achieve those goals? And if it means a recommendation that actually might reduce their assets under management in a certain area, or they're going to go away from a certain product, they're absolutely going to make that recommendation, believing that in the long term, the client's best interest will actually reward them over time.
Now, for an individual or family, having a wealth management person as part of their kind of trust advisor team, how do you interact with the other kind of members of that team?
So our wealth advisors do view themselves as part of the team, working with that individual, that client, to help them achieve their goals. And so we will work closely with tax advisors, estate planners. We have a large referral network of attorneys and so forth. So even if you're coming in as a client, and myself as an example, I've been with the firm for 3 months and I'm working with one of our advisors, and we're starting to work on estate planning, something that I'd never thought about, but I've got two small children. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was kind of like, well, we'll get to it eventually. But working with an advisor, hey, this is absolutely critical. You need to do this. You need to make sure that your kids are taken care of. And so we're going to talk to a state attorney in the next couple of months. And so those are the types of things that our advisors are happy to do and really bringing that team mentality to working with the client.
So now when you are working with somebody that's going to refer out to other people, you have to trust that they're going to make a good recommendation.
Man, that's your whole reputation on the line, too. You got to be really careful about who you connect people with, right?
Of course. Yeah, those are relationships that have been built over a series of years. Many of our advisors have been with the firm almost the entire time, so 10 plus years. And they believe that what goes around comes around in the sense that they want to make sure that when they recommend a client or refer a client to another professional, that client is going to continue to get the top tier service that they've got at BIP Wealth. And so we've built this organic network of referrals, and we don't accept fees. And none of these are, you know, again, this goes back to the fiduciary element of our business is that we're just doing it in the best interest of the client. But if the client's happy with that referral, chances are that we may get a referral back at some point in the future that may result in a new client.
But there's no like finder's fee or commission, sales commission relationship?
Never.
Now, you mentioned that the founders were baseball players, college baseball players. Is there an emphasis on kind of athletes? Do you have a division that focuses in on, because a lot of them are high net worth?
Yeah, it's a really interesting element that I hadn't considered when I came over to this company is that we've got a baseball division and a professional athlete division. They're kind of amalgamated into one.
You have a baseball division?
We've got a baseball division, and it's led by two former professional baseball players, Jim Poole and Kyle Schmidt. And so not only did they play professional ball for many years, but they've got many years of personal wealth advisory experience. And so as you can imagine, between them, our co-founder Bill Harris and our chairman Randy Carroll, both of whom played ball at Georgia Tech, we bring a deep bench of financial expertise to these ball players, many of whom 19, 20, 22 years old. They're just getting started in the minor leagues, and or some of them are very successful major leaguers themselves. And so for them to get top-tier financial advice from people who understand what they're going through in terms of the double-edged sword of professional athletics. Hey, it could be a lot of money up front, and you may have no life experience or that network built around you over a series of years like many of us do accumulating wealth, and now you got to make great decisions. Well, who are you going to turn to give you those type of great decisions or recommendations? And that's our team in the baseball division.
So now I know you've only been with BIP Wealth for a short period of time, but what do you see your role being over time?
Yeah, I was brought on to BIP Wealth to help them continue to posture for growth. One of the things I did at Higher Heroes USA over the past 9 years was help build it from 6 employees to 115 employees in 6 different states and about $12 million in revenue from $400,000 when I joined. So I have experience building a company, and we continue to grow. And so the idea is to make sure we have the structures in place, the organization, that we're retaining the right employees. I'm not going to touch the financial advice. They're experts at what they do. But those are one of the things, again, from 16 years of leadership positions, those are some of the things that I can do to help that the company continue to grow.
So now, any advice to a C-level person that's coming into a new opportunity like you are to kind of get the lay of the land and to get up to speed as quickly as possible?
I think humility goes a long way.
Come in guns a-blazing, huh? New sheriff
right.
in town.
That's right. Nobody wants to hear about what you did in the past. I mean, when it's relevant, then certainly you should bring that up. But nobody wants to know what you did for the past decade. And just appreciate the talent that you have. We've got phenomenal team members at BIP Wealth. They don't need my help in their day-to-day. But there are insights I've gained from a completely different industry that they probably don't have. And so over time, as I've learned the business, I've seen ways that I can insert myself to give those recommendations and just build credibility.
So now when you're coming into an industry that maybe wasn't the industry you were in previously, what kind of fresh eyes do you have to this specific industry that you're bringing to the table?
It's a really cluttered space. There's a lot of competition out there to get into people's wallets and to give them recommendations. And of course, there's if you look at the news at all, there's a lot of dialogue every day about what the market's doing. And people make a lot of emotional decisions based on what they see on TV or what they see on the internet. And so one of the things I was trained to do in the Marine Corps was to take a chaotic environment and bring it back to kind of the central direction by using a framework, decision-making framework. And so I think that can be said for this space and really how people make financial decisions in an environment where they're getting headlines every day telling there's going to be a recession, or maybe there's not going to be a recession, you should buy this, you should sell this. Coming back to a place where there's an expert who can advise you from that framework to say, let's stop the emotion, let's look at the plan, let's look at the long-term goals, and then let's execute on that, was really interesting to me to see how applicable my background was to this space. And I think it's probably that same way in every space because we're human beings dealing with human beings.
I wonder if it's not even magnified a little bit if you're dealing with a couple, because maybe husband and wife don't always see things exactly the same way without the benefit of some third-party objectivity, right? Or maybe some of these athletes, they have a team around them. So it's almost like your people have to be part therapist too, yeah?
Yeah. First of all, I have no idea what you're talking about. men and women maybe not getting along in marriage sometimes or seeing eye to eye.
But money is a very emotionally charged topic,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. And there's a lot of fear around, am I going to be prepared for retirement? Or if you're a member of a team as a young baseball player and you've got someone who has a guy, right? And you know, my guy told me to do this, you may want to go along with that. And so, yeah, I do think our advisors, in a way that, for example, a computer algorithm couldn't do, can sit down with you shoulder to shoulder and have those conversations and kind of lead you to that same place. Hey, what's important to you and what's important to you? So therapist is not the right term, but certainly counselor and advisor, having that person in your corner is absolutely a major function of what our advisors do.
Now, what about the sales and marketing? When you are dealing with people's livelihood, their net worth, making a decision to change, because I would imagine a lot of people who have some wealth already have somebody in place that they're using as an advisor. So you're asking them to change from what they have to BIP Wealth. How does that work?
It really comes back to establishing a relationship, and that, if you've got something that's working for you, then we're probably not in a great position to try to move you away from that. Our sweet spot is people who don't have those advisors, or people who didn't get what they were expecting for whatever reason.
Right. But if what they were expecting is gains and then the market goes down, you know, it could be anybody's fault. And all of a sudden they're like, I want a different advisor because the market went down. And then they go to you. I mean, is that a great client? Because if they're expecting you'd only go up, then that's going to be a challenge as well.
It could be a challenge. And speaking to our advisors, they've talked about dealing with clients and sometimes former clients that had that mentality of, I just always want to beat the market. And if you're working with someone who always sees around the corner and is always beating the market, they may be doing something illegal, right? I mean, we need to be honest that, that the market, our view is that the market rewards discipline in the long term. And so we would come back to, what are your long-term goals? What are the tools that we can put in place to help you achieve them? And expect to weather some downturns. You know, that's part of having a great plan in place. And, when one of our advisors gets a call from a client because someone sent out a tweet or the market is responding to a trade war, for example, one of the things our advisors do is say, understand all that. I understand what you're feeling. This is your life's work that we're talking about, your life savings oftentimes. What's the plan? And do we still think it's a good plan? And if it is a good plan, we've planned for this too.
And then when you take that kind of holistic view of their the relationship and that being the most important thing, it's easier to kind of talk them off the ledges, like when the market does go down, because it's going to go down. That's just the nature of it.
Yeah, it absolutely comes back to relationship. And that's one of the reasons why when we have a prospect coming to the door, our leadership team looks at the personalities of the advisors, and each of them has their own personality and their own techniques. And we try to match that prospect with the advisor that's going to be that closest fit. We've got one of our advisors who loves hunting. Well, he's going to get the guy who's got a Trout Unlimited license plate. Yeah. That commonality, you know, and sometimes the financial advice is almost ancillary to that. Having
right.
a person who understands you feel and gets you. So that's really, really critical.
So what is, yeah, tell us a little bit about recruiting, because that's going to be part of your focus as well in the coming months, right? Is building out your team? Is that accurate?
That's not going to be my role primarily.
Oh, okay.
That's going to remain with our executive team. The, Bill Harris, our co-founder primarily, and Eric, Eric is our chief investment, Eric Kramer is our chief investment officer. And so, my impression is they don't have any shortage of great advisors that want to be part of our team.
And then for you, what's the most important thing that you got going on right now? How can we help you?
Certainly, the thing that's most critical to me right now is making sure that our processes and our structure are in place to allow for the growth that we see that there's a need for. What you can do for us is to continue to get the word out about BIP Wealth as a great resource for high net worth individuals, either those who are not satisfied with their current advisor relationship or those who are just getting to the point where this is becoming a consideration for them. Over half of our clients are retirees, right? So these are people who have worked an entire lifetime to get to where they are. They may not fit your view of someone who's with a private wealth management company, but you know, they're salt of the earth, most of them folks who just want people they can trust and people they can rely on. And so if that's the type of organization and person that you want to work with, then BIP Wealth would be a great fit.
And then how much wealth do they have to be a good fit?
Our target is 1 million and up.
And if they had 1 million and up, is there what's the coordinates to get a hold of you guys?
Our website is www.bipwealth.com. And right at the top, there's a contact us mm-hmm. button that they can click on, and they'll get a response within 24 hours from us. We'd love to start that conversation.
Good stuff. Well, Nate, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on the new post, man, and keep up the good work.
Thanks,
I think it's very exciting what you're doing. And the one thing that I resonated with very early on in our conversation is this, it is what you bring from your other life. It's this this mentality and maybe it's skill set and actual formal education on how to take a chaotic situation and guide someone through that and get them centered and I'm sure recentered from yep. time to time. And it seems like it's not only part of your nature, but kind of core to the BIP Wealth culture, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, financial services was never on my radar and just like the nonprofit space was never on my radar as an infantry officer, it kind of found me. But I think when you're a type of person, as I am, who believes that service is what I'm designed to do, BIP Wealth's culture of service, people helping people, hey, every decision we make is filtered through a lens of, is this in the client's best interest? I can get on board with that all day long.
Well, it's an exciting time for you. So keep us posted with your progress. Maybe check in from time to time, and we'll look forward to watching this thing continue to grow for you.
Would love to. Thanks very much.
All right. Hey, how about staying with us? We're going to visit with a couple more guests.
Great.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us the founder of Morse Corporate Advisors, Mr. Gordon Morse. Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Hey, man, you learn anything in that last segment?
I love the Marines. Semper Fi. I spent 30 years in that business. So it's nice to see that the next generation has the right attitude, the right values. It's good to see.
So now you pivoted from the financial world into a corporate advisory world.
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that happened?
Sure. I was very fortunate to spend 30 years with three of the great firms in financial services history, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, and Oppenheimer. I led hundreds of advisors, both institutional and high net worth. And after 30 years of, you know, being in the hot seat, being in the frying pan, if you will, and having achieved all my goals, I decided that I would take my experience of being a leader, combine it with my experience of being an investor. I've been an investor since 1995. And having lived through, as a leader, all the different market cycles, recession, credit crisis, technology meltdown, I wanted to combine those experiences with my investment experience to help entrepreneurs be better at what they do.
So now when you say entrepreneur, what size company are you typically dealing with?
My clients are startups up to $200 million in revenues.
So it could be somebody with an idea on a napkin, or do they need to already have clients?
I do work with a number of startups that are kind of pre-revenue. They've raised money. They're building out infrastructure. I help them with capital allocation because how you deal with your capital is critical in ascertaining whether or not you're really going to be a success. So yes, I do work with startups, but most of my clients are operating businesses.
Mm-hmm. And then are they plateaued, or they're in a turnaround situation? What kind of state are they typically in?
They're typically three or four different situations where owners call me and get me involved. Number one is there may be an underperforming division. There may be an underperforming aspect of their business. They're looking for an activator. They're looking for someone to give fresh eyes, objective, dispassionate view of where they are and be a trusted advisor in terms of bouncing strategy, et cetera. The second thing I get involved in is definitely fixing businesses that are broken. It could be secular trends that have hammered the retail space.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a bad decision that was made in terms of strategy, capital allocation. I like to come in and fix things. It's very rewarding to see an owner go from a state of despair and worry to a state of, I'm still alive, and not only am I alive, I'm going to make it. And the third situation is really helping them evaluate whether it's a new business, make an acquisition, do a merger, bring in a private equity investor. I sit on the owner side of the seat. I represent the owner, and I give them a dispassionate, objective view. So a lot of owners are very emotional. They're very passionate about their business, which is what they should be. And sometimes when you're that close, it's hard to be purely objective.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know, so you bring in like the Chinese call, a third eye. It helps an owner kind of figure out, all right, I'm on the right path, or I need to shift, I need to tact, and that's where I come in.
So now what's been the most rewarding kind of project you worked on? You don't have to name the company's name, but maybe tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely. So far, I have a client who is a retailer. His family has been in Atlanta in the business for 50 years. They had an amazing business. Amazon, the internet, Walmart has hammered their business. And when he called me, he was in a pretty tough state. He was really, really worried about saving
hopeless,
the business.
Right? It seems hopeless. You're getting bombarded from every side.
He was in a, I would say, a state of despondency. And he and I have worked really hard to reimagine his business because one thing Amazon doesn't have is his relationships.
Right, it's human beings talking to human
exactly,
beings.
Exactly, the service, nor do they have the 50-year story. So what we've done is really repackaged his business. And we focused on a couple of underperforming sectors that require service, that require relationships, that require one-on-one contact that Amazon can't compete with. And he's back. And I think he's about a year away from thriving and regaining the momentum that he had years ago.
Now, tell me about that moment when you first, like, you know, you have a theory that this is going to work, but then you implement some of the stuff. And then when did you start seeing some, hey, this might actually work?
That's a great question. What I do is I come in and I first do deep analysis. I have the owner really walk me through every aspect of their business, their model, their people, their products, their services, et cetera. And either I'll have a moment where I can say, hey, let's take this aspect of
There's
your business.
There's an opportunity here.
Correct.
That maybe you haven't been.
Correct. And one of the owners just said, you know, sometimes businesses suffer from benign neglect. They're not intentionally not focusing on an aspect of their business. They're just being distracted or pulled in another direction.
Right.
So what I get them to do is see an opportunity where they may see a lack of opportunity, where I see its service, its relationships, its margins. And this retailer, we are focusing very heavily on one aspect of his business. It's framing, actually, which is a great business because it requires personal service. It's high-end, you know, affluent clientele. And he had just not been focusing on it. So right now, we're just laser-focused on that business. It's growing. It's generating good cash flow. And we're going to take that to fund the other businesses that we want to fix.
When you first go into these situations and it comes to fixing a broken business or just capitalizing on some areas that maybe have not been getting a lot of attention, do you see some patterns? Like, is there like this bucket of four or five things that you are almost always going to see, or, you know, I'm going to look here, here, and here every time, and you see these things sort of crop up over and over, some low-hanging fruit?
Well, as someone who ran critical businesses and has been an investor, all businesses share certain things in common. All successful businesses share certain things in common. And yes, I definitely look at the business model. I look at the people. I look at the margins. And I look at the market. I look at their competitors. And yeah, I kind of look at all businesses through those lenses. And typically, I will see something that maybe the owner has missed or neglected, and I'm able to kind of dialogue with them and get them to focus their energies on resources in that area. And lo and behold, you know, when an owner gets excited and when an owner gets focused and when an owner has that buy-in, typically they're going to be successful is my experience.
But I suspect sometimes you probably see some things pretty quickly with that fresh eyes that you, and maybe not 5 minutes, but maybe in 5 hours, you see something that I would have never occurred to me in 5 years, right?
Typically, it's like within an hour.
Really?
Yeah,
it's
I mean,
because
yeah,
you know where to look.
I know where to look.
Right?
I know where to look. And as someone who's invested in a lot of different companies and has operated, I'm very focused. I'm laser focused. And I can typically find out very quickly by asking the owner a lot of questions. You know, my first meeting, I'm asking questions. I'm listening. And typically within that first hour, I will uncover something or not uncover something. Because if I can't really add value, I don't want to be involved. I want my owner to have an incredible experience. I want them to view me as a long-term consigliere, if if you now, saw The Godfather.
But now they got to be coachable too, though, right? You ever run into that sometimes where
yes.
they're happy to write the check, get the input, and then they're going to go and keep doing what they've been doing?
Well, sometimes sometimes what you have to recommend is very, very tough medicine. I recently met with an owner of an environmental technology company. And when we really got underneath the business, we saw that there were – it was capital intensive. It was labor intensive. It was geographically dispersed. And there's a lot of new competition coming into the environmental space. You know, environmental sustainability is a big, big secular trend. So he went from having very little competition 10 years ago to a ton of competition right now. And he has brought in a lot of family that he pays a lot of money to, and now the business is hurting. It was not easy for me to tell him that he needed to really cull his business, and he had to make some very, very hard decisions regarding who he was going to keep and who he was going to shed, because his cost structure was out of line relative to his revenue. That was very hard for him. And he didn't take the advice, and he's really suffering for it. I feel very badly for him because he's emotionally involved with, you know, with his employees. But he's the problem is his cost structure is just way out of whack.
Now, do you specialize in certain niches? Are you like more in manufacturing? Are you more in professional services? Or
that's a great question. My clients are professional services, retail, technology, healthcare. I don't get involved in real estate. I don't get involved in very high-end, capital-intensive manufacturing. My clients that are in the manufacturing space are more low-tech. But there's – and I focus on Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I want to be here. I want to be accessible to my clients. And there's nothing like that face-to-face.
Right.
So, yeah, there's three or four verticals that I really enjoy.
Now, when you're working with a professional services firm and they're kind of selling the invisible, you know, there isn't a thing. They're selling kind of intellectual property. How do you go about doing that? Because that seems, you know, that relies a lot on relationships and trust.
It does. One of my clients is a very old-line professional services firm that's been here in Atlanta for over 50 years. They started as an accounting firm. Now they're accounting, consulting, wealth management, tax credit. They're involved in a very wide array of businesses. One of their businesses, which I can't name, has not really grown in the last 15 years. They've had a lot of leadership changes. They've had a lot of turnover. They're still committed to the business, but they've never gotten it right. So the CEO and I met, and he felt with my background, I'd be a good person to work with the partner. And it's going extremely well. We're basically redefining how his team interacts with the other people at the firm, making it more integrated, making it more a part of the ebb and flow of the firm rather than kind of an outlier. It was,
so it was
always
like
operating
a silo.
As an outlier. Yes. Right. And the firm, the other partners of the firm didn't have the buy-in. They weren't supporting it to the level that they had. Rightly so, though. They had a lot of bad experiences. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to get burned again. So we had to kind of reimagine the pitch and the marketing internally.
Right.
You know, and get the partners to buy into the fact that, yeah, you've been in the business a long time. It's been a source of pain, but we can fix it. But we need you to help us.
Right.
We need you to
and
buy in.
And it's everybody's best interest to do this.
Everybody's.
Everybody wins.
Everybody's. So everybody's.
Got to be rowing the same way.
Yeah. It's professional services. Integrating all the businesses it's a challenge. Mm-hmm. And you run through, you get partner conflict.
Right.
Sometimes I'm a mediator. With partners, trying to get them on the same page.
Mm-hmm. So do sometimes you start in as one thing and then there's kind of a, you kind of spread around the organization. Like you might go into this one area and then do some work, and then somebody else is like, hey, can you take a look at our division?
Yeah, my goal is for that division to have a really great experience. Uh-huh. So the leader of the division says, you've got to meet with these other divisions.
Right.
That's the goal.
Well, that bumps up against the question that I had, because I'm wondering about the whole sales and marketing thing for somebody like you. Because not unlike our own guest in that organization, the level of trust that a business owner has got to place in you, I just get the sense you can't throw up a billboard on I-75, take calls, and get new clients, right? The whole sales and marketing thing for you has got to be, I don't know, elegant, well-planned. It's surely it's not luck.
No, it's a great question. Fortunately, I've been in Atlanta my entire adult life. Aside from a 5-year tour of duty, if you will, in the Northeast. And I have deep connections here. I've raised my family here. My wife is from here. I consider this my home because I've been here since the 80s. So I have a lot of connectivity. And I use that connectivity. I leverage that connectivity. I'm also very active in a number of organizations. And you're right. It's not something you cold call for. It's not something you slap a billboard up. When I go in and have a meeting, it's that owner has to have trust and faith that the information that they're giving me stays with me mm-hmm. and never leaves a room. And that takes a lot of faith on their part that I'm going to lift up the kimono and show this guy my entire business. So it takes me making them comfortable, and it takes me helping them understand that my background is right for them, and that as someone who spent 35 years in financial services and walked away with a spotless something called CRD, which is our regulatory record, that helps reinforce with them that I understand confidentiality and that I'll never violate that.
And what's next for you? How can we help?
Just let people know I'm here. This is my second act. This is 2.0. I've always dreamed of having my own firm. Mm-hmm. I was never able to do it because I was raising, you know, three daughters and taking care of my wife and taking care of responsibilities. Now that my daughters are adults and in the working world and my wife is an entrepreneur, I now have the time to take the risk to build the firm that I want to build. So I'm here for the long haul. I really want to.
So you're looking for clients? Are you looking for other advisors?
I'm not looking for other advisors right now. I have a number of people that I'm considering taking on as partners mm-hmm. that have complementary skill sets to me. I'm always looking for new clients. I love the grind. More importantly, I love the relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm purely relationship driven.
So Atlanta-based firms that have either reached a plateau, they're maybe struggling, there's a dip, there's some disruption in the marketplace,
yes.
They should call Gordon Morse.
Reach out.
Morse. So what's the website?
MorseCorporateAdvisors.com, or I can be reached on my phone, 404-310-2608.
So I have a T-shirt that often gets a great deal of comment, and you'll appreciate this. It says, "You can't scare me. I have two daughters." So it sounds like maybe
I got three daughters.
You got three.
I'm like, you can't scare me. I'm shocked I have any hair left, actually.
Well, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your story with us. Keep us posted and keep up the good work, man.
My pleasure. It's great being here.
All right, stay with us. We're going to visit with one more guest, yeah?
Absolutely.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
He's been very patient. I watched him nodding his head a little bit. I think he may have taken some notes. Did you learn anything in those last couple segments?
I did. I learned quite a bit.
All right, that new voice you hear is President and CEO with Viz, Mr. Mitch Hughes. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
Well, tell us about Viz. How are you serving folks?
Well, Viz is a 23-year-old startup company.
There you go.
So we've been in Atlanta for this entire time. Started off as an engineering company doing commercial engineering, civil engineering, designing buildings, basically, but very technology-driven. Mm-hmm. And the technology side of our company took off. And after that, some years later, we added a commercial construction company, and the company grew. But the technology side was a place where I found my heart. Now, my background in education was in engineering and physics, and then computer science later. I liked school, so I kept going back. Until I got older than the professors, then you kind of, you know. Better,
I'm going to be a professor now. Yeah. That was one of the choices, right? You could have been a professor.
Well, I love it. I love mentoring. I'm not sure that I want to be in a classroom educating. I don't know if my personality would be the best for it, but I do enjoy that quite a bit. And I like doing it in a one-on-one environment much more. And so a few years ago, I was approaching, I don't like to use the word retirement because I wasn't going to stop working, but I do a lot of charitable work and I was going in that direction and had this crazy idea about reinventing software and what computers should be, and made the mistake of telling it to one of my mentors and great friends, and he would not let me not pursue it. He just absolutely stuck with it. And so here we are today doing technology.
So now you created software that does what?
We did. So if you think back, there really hasn't been much change in software in a long time. For over 30 years, since the advent of the graphic user interface with Windows and Mac, computers have evolved, but they really haven't changed too much. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. So I have a love-hate relationship with technology. Right. I love what it can do for me. I find it very difficult to use. And the fact that every program you open has, you know, a tremendous menu bar at the top that once you get past home and file menus is probably different. And then under that are so many choices, and under that are so many choices. And every program is the same. And so every time you get a new product, you have to learn it. And it kind of started with a picture. I saw a picture and I didn't know where to store it because I knew it, there were five places I could store it. Did it go under vacations? Did it go under travel? Did it go under business? Did it go under? I just knew I wouldn't find it wherever I put it, or I'd have to put it five places. And in the middle of the night, I woke up with an idea, which is sometimes what happens. You know, at nighttime's the one time I get to relax and think. The rest of the day, you're performing. And so I woke up in the middle of the night with this idea for a new way to do computers, a completely new interface. It has no menus, no buttons, no anything, but considerably more power, and based on a three-dimensional interface that you kind of walk into and visualize information. It's easy to the concept of visualizing something like a table or a building is easy to grasp. Mm-hmm. But when you start visualizing communication and knowledge, it becomes more difficult to grasp. But I woke up in the middle of the night with this idea of how to visualize those types of things. I said, if I do that, I don't need menus. I don't need to name files. I don't need to know where I've stored them to find them. In fact, the computer can become much more personal, easier to use, and infinitely more powerful because it can learn to customize itself to me. And so,
It's using a tablet or a computer of some sort still?
Yes. One of the big questions we get is it a new operating system? And my pat answer, right or wrong, is no. In a lot of ways, it's better than a new operating system because it can sit on top of any operating system. Mm-hmm. So it sits on top of Windows or on top of Mac or Linux or your PDA or your cell phone. It really doesn't matter what you put it on. And it creates this environment where knowledge is at your fingertips all the time. And it's dynamic knowledge, like walking down a sidewalk and pointing your phone at a bush that you've noticed it's prettier. You know, it's in bloom and you say, wow, that's really pretty. And you can point your phone at it and have your phone tell you what kind of bush it is, what recipes it could be used in, and check and see if the local nursery has it in stock. And just, it's real world things, but it's also a great business application.
So it's utilizing the device that exists already.
Right.
And it's laying on top of it to make it more functional and more intuitive.
It does, and it does so much more. The spaces we're going into, you know, a business, regardless of your product, if you don't have focus of where you're coming into a business, you're going to have a hard time making your marketing budget and sales budget
so
last.
So you picked a couple narrow areas.
You picked some areas.
So what'd you pick?
So, well, you can guess from my background. So we have four areas of focus we're going into, but they're overlapped. So one is design and construction. So because we can visualize anything, I can visualize this building we're in right now. And you can have that model and you can go into that model. You can immerse yourself in that model visually.
But if I can imagine it, how does my imagination get onto the device so I can use it?
So we take the computer screen, and instead of it being a 2D screen like it is now, we actually create a three-dimensional environment. So whether you're looking at the building that you can walk through with your mouse if you want to, or you could use VR or AR headsets like you would in a gaming environment where you're going through a building, the difference is we can do that. We can walk through buildings. But the buildings are intelligent, so every window knows it's a window. So 5 years after it's built, if Johnny hits a baseball and breaks that window, you literally ask the window where it came from. Every piece of knowledge, everything that's been done in that building is collected by the virtual building that's in the computer. But the same is true of you. So the things you do in your computer, it's collecting that information. And there's a few things we do that are very different than other technology. And one of them is, because it knows where you are, it's changing the information it provides to you. So it's relative to where you are. So if I'm at work, it says, wow, the information around you and the people you work with is probably much more relevant to you right now than information from your friends. And certainly much more relevant than information that's public, like on the internet. So it can provide you information that's relevant to where you are and what you're doing. We call it a live, work, play environment.
But like hypothetically, if I'm, say I'm reading a blog at my work, mm-hmm. and a name that I'm reading comes up, will your software say, you know, this person's part of your LinkedIn or something like that?
As a matter of fact, yes. So obviously, wow, it doesn't,
very cool.
It doesn't know what it doesn't know. So right. People always ask, where does the information come from? Well, it comes from your use.
Right.
And, but it can data mine, and it, you know, it can pull information out of the things that are already on your computer. If you want it to, you get to tell it, yes, I want to do that or no. And it will tell you why it would be a good idea. And so what it can see, I'll give you a quick example. Say you're doing something at the office and you're researching something. It may tell you about something a coworker has done that's on a similar subject that you don't even know exists. And it does that because it recognizes that that's a coworker. So that information is not random information. It's information that's probably very specific to what you would need. And it will suggest information you don't know exists to say, this might be relevant to you. And the same is true as if a name comes up, you can dig into that name. You could find out information about them that they make public. Obviously, you can only get to what they let you get to.
but from a company standpoint, wouldn't that help in the communication? So like if you have 100 employees and somebody out in the field is doing something in two different places and they're kind of replicating each other's work, wouldn't it be good to know, hey, you don't have to create this wheel again. We've already got this.
That is exactly right. That is the type of thing that it's very good at. And in construction, for instance, when you're trying to plan things, instead of using a bunch of different programs to do things, as far as we know, and I know this is a big statement, and I apologize for it because it's surely it can't be accurate. But so far, it appears that it's the first software written that in theory can do anything. We don't have the limitations because it wasn't written to be a single product. It wasn't written in a silo to be a word processing program or a spreadsheet or to solve an accounting. It was written with we call it a neural database. So the database itself creates its own connections. Instead of somebody, a database developer saying, this information leads to this information and this is the only kind of information I will store, we've created this three-dimensional database that acts. In fact, if you look at it visually, which you can do on our screen because we have a three-dimensional interface, it actually looks a lot like the brain firing neurons. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting, model.
All right, let's talk about me for a minute. Okay, we've been here almost an hour. We haven't talked about me yet. I'm the number two man in a media company that has 36,000 plus audio interviews in a library out there, right?
Right.
And given enough time, I can go find just about anything. Is there a potential application for this to make it easier and more fun for me and or just people out in the world to go access the audio content that they want to go listen to?
Yes, and that's one of our biggest problems and strengths. Our strengths are that anybody that sees the software, and radio, let's face it, is the environment that maybe my face is great in because you can't see it, but a computer program, you also can't see it. So it's hard to describe something that is completely different than anybody has ever seen on a computer before. And so in your case, where you have information, you could not only look up information by subject or by the speaker, but you would also see all the other related information to it. So you could get close. You could say, I'm hunting for something on a particular subject, and you will see it looks like stars in the universe on the screen. And as you give it more description, it narrows down and narrows down and narrows down till there's only a few. And it not only shows you those few, it even shows you how they're connected to each other. So it shows Wow. lines connecting them, and it shows the relevance and the strength of those connections. And, for instance, if you reach out and you email to somebody, you've created a connection to them, but it's pretty weak unless they respond. And the more often they respond and the more recent they respond, the stronger that relationship is. And this uses that relational intelligence to say this information is relevant to you, but then it balances it for where you are and what you're doing at the time.
But would it be able to, just take the audio file, like you mentioned software multiple times in this conversation.
Right.
So if somebody in the future was typing in software and we were able to leverage your software, would they be able to have this bubble up as one of the kind of search results?
You mean the program itself?
Or like this episode's going to be published.
Yes.
And if you didn't mention in text form the word software, but we mentioned it a lot during the audio portion, would it be able to search the audio and say, hey, this is really talking about software?
If the information is in there, yes. So it could pull out, for instance, the words you've used. It uses AI, like a lot of software now is starting to use more and more AI. And it, of course, uses a lot of AI to find things that are relevant. So if I communicate to you, whether it's written or talking like this, our software is trying to determine what we're talking about and how that is relevant to other things. So it's one thing to take information and take it in a silo and say, okay, we've communicated with each other and here's what I think it's about. But if you add the context around it, if it starts to see habits, we call that self-aware information. It understands not only what that information is about, but how it relates to the information around it. So if it changes the information around it and vice versa. It actually, so the it's not static. The information itself is dynamic and learning more and more about itself because of other things you do that aren't this communication. So it can start to say, oh, you're on the radio. It starts to figure out more and more intelligence.
Now, for you and your company's growth, because this is kind of out there in terms of it's not common knowledge and it's not something that they're saying, I'd like this, you're creating something and then people are going to figure out how best to leverage it and use it. You're going to have suggestions around it. So how do you go about kind of getting it out there?
Well, we've been developing it in dark for 3 years. So we have a lot of people that have been working on this quietly and under non-disclosures for several years. And now we get to say, hey we're here. But we wanted to make sure it worked first. Yeah, it was plan. Literally that moment where you turn it on and you sit there and wait to see, does it say hello?
I hope it does what I hope wanted to do.
If not, wow, we wasted a lot of time and money.
But you had to focus, you chose to focus on a couple of distinct niches, right?
We did.
It's like a candy store, right? You could drive yourself nuts going down all these different paths.
Retailers see it as e-commerce. I mean, it doesn't matter what business you're in. Everybody sees it as their own thing. And there's a lot of truth to that. But for us, it's design and construction. So we can do design and construction management. Because we're visual, we can take all the files that they have of models and we can create a very intelligent model for them that is learning the information of the project. It's one of the things that happens. It's called BIM, Building Information Modeling. And I was one of the people who started that with my partner, Errol Wolford. And he was one of the four founders of Revit, which is now the largest modeling application in architecture. And so there are products out there that do a good job modeling. And recently there are projects out there and products that will help you with project management and construction and communicating with people. But when you hand the building off, hand the keys to the owner, that information is largely lost. That owner doesn't know how to use Revit or any of the other programs. Right. So the information is lost. So the building that you're in, again, when Johnny breaks that window or air conditioning needs service, what if the air conditioner can tell you in advance when it needs service? And that's what our software does. It makes the building, everything that's ever happened, all the knowledge about that building is collected, but not just about the building, but about the businesses inside it and the people. And then you take that to your family, your community, your neighborhood. So our focuses are design and construction, property management after design and construction, hospitality, because imagine a hotel that is intelligent you walk into and it starts telling you about its restaurants and specials and the vetting tells you
when it's time to change. Would it be able to tell me about the customers that are staying at the hotel?
Absolutely. And then smart cities. So I've been traveling around the world lately talking to governments and community organizations and so forth about having intelligent cities, because smart cities are what people think smart cities are and what they are two different things. Smart cities are really largely about infrastructure.
So what do they think they are?
Infrastructure. They think it's about what it is infrastructure, traffic flow, waterworks, electricity, and a few other things. But what people seem to think they are, because of televisions and movies, is that the city is somehow connected to you. Well, it is through infrastructure, but otherwise it's probably very few connection points. I mean, one of the practical examples of AI is, my phone starts up in the morning, I get in the car, and it tells me how long it takes to get to work because it's figured out that I'm going to work in the morning.
Right.
But to apply that to where if you're going to a business, you're going to a restaurant, what if it tells you which restaurants have food in the area or new restaurants that are personal to you, the types of things you like and that have specials. And as you're approaching, it's telling you where the parking spaces are. And if one of your neighbors has a party, it's reminding you about their family and that type of thing before the event. It's connecting you to your community and about the outdoor theater that's having a concert this weekend that is the type of music you like and that your family likes. And so that intelligence starts to make the computer something that becomes part of your life in a very personal and valuable way, not just to collect information to sell it for advertising, but to make it personal and valuable as part of your day-to-day life.
Now, what about the privacy elements of this and the comfort that people are having to share all of these kind of bits of information about themselves with, like you said, advertising, which is at the heart of a lot of the technology now, that everything that is happening is to, you know, push some product to you or some service through right. some platform.
Well, I can tell you, first off, currently that's not our business model.
Right.
And, but also we've actually created
But that wasn't Google, you know, also had a kind of pure at heart when they started right. to do no evil.
Yeah, to do no evil. Yeah. that's a different subject. But what we've done is we've created an interface that makes it a lot more, it makes it clearer to you what information you want to share with who. So for instance, it creates these environments. So when I'm in my home, it understands my wife is my wife, my children are my children, and I share different information with my wife than I do my children. Mm-hmm. And different yet with my brothers and my and different yet with my cousins and friends. And it understands that. In a corporate environment, it understands it. In a personal environment, and you get to dictate in a very visual way, which makes it very, very easy for you to control exactly what is shared with anyone. And you have total control over it. It's beyond even European requirements, which are the most stringent requirements on controlling privacy.
Now, but like is the software going to be part of devices? Is that how it's going to be paid for? You know, because if I'm not paying for something, then I'm the product usually.
That's true.
That's insightful.
Can I use that? That's great. Yes, it's for end users, it's a subscription. It's just a SaaS model. For businesses, it's based on the size of the business because it's not one of those where we're going in and solving what the project manager needs. We have benefit for everything. We do resource management. You can assign tasks and track them. You can anything that's relevant to you and your business, you can do. So we price it based on the size of the business. And then we also do a long-term plan. In fact, we call all of our business partners because the idea is I don't go into anybody. First off, I don't do the individual sales. We have people that do that. But when I go into a business, I tell them right up front, I'm not here to sell you software. I'm here to develop a relationship. And let's figure out if you could have everything in the world handled for you, if the sky was the limit in what technology could do, what would that look like? And let's build a plan to go for that.
And so you take this core infrastructure of the software and then customize it to whatever the needs are of the client?
I do. And usually what the client needs, it already does more than they can envision because it's just so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so when they come in, it kind of opens their eyes. In fact, the first time you see it, it's so different than anything you've ever seen on a computer. I almost have to bring it in, let somebody see it, and then kind of go home and think about it. You ponder that right. for a while because you have to forget all you knew.
Right. You have to unlearn some things.
You have to unlearn, and then the second time it becomes very valuable, and all of a sudden the lights go on. And it's just, oh my gosh, I can use this for marketing. Yes, you can use it for marketing. I can use it for sales.
Right. And it must be exciting times because now it's out in the wild.
It is incredibly exciting. I've never seen anything like it. You know, I've been in business a long time, so you're sitting across the table from me. You can tell I'm not 18 years old.
Right.
And I just went on a trip, and we met with five businesses. One of them was the first time they saw it, and they're the stars in the eyes, don't know what it is yet. The other four, it was the second time they saw it, and all four of them are coming back saying, wow, we want to do this. I've never been in a place where you have something, you bring it to somebody, and they almost immediately realize this can change my whole business. Mm-hmm. Or if you bring it to them personally, you can say, this can change my whole life. This can improve my life. As our memories fail and we get older, this retains things that are valuable. My wife's mother could not remember her name, even though she knew my wife was her daughter. And to have those things at your fingertip where all of a sudden information that you're forgetting It's right there, and it's there visually. You don't have to type. You don't have to use words. It's brought to you visually so you can attain it. It makes it almost – it bridges language barriers. It does so many different things that we weren't counting on, and that was what, 3 years ago when Errol said, you've got to do this, Mitch, that's what he was talking about. He even saw that probably earlier than I did, the value that it brought to the individual person.
And then so right now you're looking for companies to kind of launch this in their company? Like what do you need right now?
That's true. So, well, we always need people in development and sales and stuff. The company is growing very quickly, so that's wonderful. So, yeah, if you're a software developer and
so a traditional
top of your
software,
class, that's great.
So a traditional software developer still can work on this even though this is kind
they
of a
can.
New kind of software.
They can. It takes a little while to get used to the way we do things and so forth, and we have our own programming methods that we have to employ. And then the other side of it is just businesses. We're finally able to talk about it and get the word out, and that's so exciting. And people get surprised when they say, why aren't you in California, or why aren't you – they don't realize Atlanta is one of the technology leaders in the world.
Right.
And this is such a great place to be. We get to draw resources from the universities around here and such great minds around here, and with Georgia Tech and on and on and on, that we get these great resources. It's just a perfect place to be.
And then so you're looking for building and construction kind of industry leaders. Is this who kind of adopts this, or is this the Challenger brand who is a good fit for you?
Yeah. So we're everything from the small business that has, you know, 10 employees or 5 employees to the businesses that I just met with that have tens of thousands of employees that are massive companies. So we're everything in between. And because of our pricing structure, as one of the people that works in my company likes to say, it's less expensive than the paint on the walls. And when you start putting it in perspective of its cost, it's very inexpensive. And the impact it can have on your business and on your life, just to free up time for you so you can do things more effectively and it not be so frustrating, is some of the feedback that we're already getting. That
now, is it a way to test it in a small scale to see if it's going to be a fit, or is it something you got to go all in on?
No, we actually have salespeople that go into businesses and they do demonstrations. They let them see it. They sit down with it. They use it. So yeah, it has all the normal processes that you would typically find. We're not quite at the point yet, and keep in mind we're just releasing. We're not quite at the point yet that you just log in and buy it online, but we will get there. So
good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more, website. Or I just have to think it and it'll appear somehow.
Yeah. That's all you have to do. If you'll just get in front of your computer No, even in front of your computer, if you type in, it's www.vizz3d.com.
And then the magic begins.
And the magic begins.
Good stuff. Well, Mitch, thank you so much for sharing your story and best of luck. It sounds exciting.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and all our guests here today. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.